Good afternoon. So today, last class, we're going to do exam review. If you don't have any questions that you want me to answer, it will be very short. So I'll just take questions and I'll answer them in some order. So show of hands, who has something they'd like me to talk about? Yes.
Can you go over the question on the latest quiz about the L1 cache?
L1 cache and TLB overlap? Okay. Yes.
What's the distribution of material like from the first third to the second third? And it's like there's more emphasis on what we've done.
Okay. Which are about?
They're all dividing up over to address.
Writing control address. Okay. Other things I should talk about?
Yeah.
What?
Fork.
Okay. Yeah.
The spring 2017 final questions 18 and 19.
Which are about?
It's about caching.
Caching. Okay.
If we need to know vector instructions.
Vector instructions, okay. Yes.
Are you guys going to post quiz solutions for this semester?
Quiz solutions, okay. Yes. Pipeline stages? Does. Okay. Yes.
Quiz number 23, question 3 on multi-level
tables. Okay. Yes.
Just general overview of what takes time.
Okay. Cover topics. Okay. Anything? Yes.
Question 12 on signals on the last spring.
Okay, 12 signals. Okay. So I will sort these. Okay, so, yes.
Sorry, questions
1
and 2 on the last
spring 2017, 1 and 2, which are on?
They're on, fidgeting and hashtags.
Hashtags and, sorry, and what?
It's, given an app. It's just.
Questions 1 and 2 is, they give you an address, and you have to turn the binary, you have to find where the cache tag would be, and how you would, do bit shifting.
Okay. Bitwise, ops, and cache tags, and cache. Okay. Okay, so I'm sure we'll have more topics later. So quiz solutions. So generally, my expectation is for quizzes, if you go to the actual quiz, we do show what the correct answers are. I probably can run something to produce something similar to the quiz solutions we have posted for prior semesters where it's all together, but I'm not sure I'll get that done until at least tomorrow. So, but they are there. So then we had distribution of material. So generally, you can look at the schedule. Look at our schedule. And everything we had a lecture on probably could be on the final. Generally, there will be, well, that's cute, about for everything after the second exam will be covered significantly more, will be probably a bit more than half of the final. And everything before that will be a bit less. So what topics does this include? So it includes early in the semester we have, I will pull this back where I can see it. So early in the semester we had some C, assembly, Y86 and ISAs, RISC, CISC, etc. Bitwise, operators, seek, pipelining, and pipe, caching, and locality and caches. And later in the semester, and cache blocking. In the semester we had performance optimizations, including loop unrolling, etc., multiple accumulators. Exceptions, signals, processes, virtual memory. So that's my rough list of topics by looking at what's on the schedule. So And sort of under optimizations, an important subtopic was out of order processor / functional units. Talked about how processors actually execute instructions, why multiple accumulators actually do anything is an important part of that. Okay, and related to that, fork, we covered this more in spring 2017 than this semester. Won't be on exam. I'm glad to tell you about it, but I presume now is not the time. Okay. So then we have on our last quiz, we had a question about the overlap between the L1 cache and the TLB accesses. And the question asks, we want to have an L1 which is organized based on physical addresses. So we can look at the physical address and say, I know where we're storing a value. I phrased it that, so conceptually, it's as if we're doing the whole address translation, we're accessing the page table, which we aren't really doing, but we're accessing the TLB instead, and computing the physical page number and getting our physical address, and then we're accessing the cache, the way we learn that cache has typically worked. But it's going to be the case that we can take this shortcut we talked about where we do the lookup a bit earlier. And what this depended on was that we would worry about how we split, was that we would look at how the address split up. So our physical address gets split up into a physical page number and a page offset. And our virtual address gets split up into a virtual page number and a page offset. And these are the same page offsets. And we can also split up our physical address into a cache tag, a cache index, and a cache offset. And so this is, I'll do the key here, VPN equals virtual page number, PO equals page offset, VPN is physical page number, CT is cache tag, CI is cache index, CO is cache offset. So the cache index is needed to look up the set. So we only need the cache index to look up the set. And that's the first step of our cache lookup. So once we look up the set, we compare the tag and also use our offset to extract the part of the block we just got, each of the whatever the block we want is, and send it to the processor as this is the result of the thing you asked me for. And so the question is really asking, does the cache index overlap with the page offset or not? If yes, sorry, is the cache index only, is the cache index part of the page offset or not? So if yes, if it's part of the page offset, then we know the cache index without knowing the PPN. We don't need the PPN to figure out the cache index, we just know the physical address. So this is the, so our scenario looks like we have a PPN and a page offset. We have our cache tag and our cache index and our cache offset. So this is the good scenario. So here, once we know the page offset, we know the cache index. We don't know the whole physical address, but the part we don't know, we don't need yet. So don't need PPN until later, but as if using the physical address. So, and if no, then we don't know the cache index until we find the PPN. So if no, there's more, like we can limit down the possible indices because we probably know part of the index, but we need the physical page number to figure out exactly which set we want to access and therefore what the index for that set is. So to answer this question, you need to look at these cache organizations and say, well, where are the index bits? And a trick for doing this quickly is that we want to figure out just how much stuff is in each way. Because you can think of that we have, if our way is, say, 1 kilobyte, every kilobyte, we can, if we look at a kilobyte of memory, the first byte goes in the first part of a set, the next one goes in the next, and so on until we get to a whole kilobyte in our whole kilobyte worth is that whole way. And then we run out of space in that way, a column of our cache, and we need to go to the next one or wrap around. Another way of looking at this is that 2 to the CI plus CO is the size of a way. And therefore, log base 2, the size of array, is the number of CI plus CO bits. And the size of array is equal to the size of the cache size divided by the associativity, the number of way blocks per set. That's the fastest way. There's other ways you can compute, you can do any other way of computing the index and offset bits, And I'm going to use this shortcut. So for our 32 kilobyte direct map cache, each way is 32 KB. Therefore, CI plus CO equals, that's 2 to the 15 bytes is 15. And if we look at our problem up here, we need to figure out, well, how big is the page offset? And if we consider our page, our thing here, we have 16K pages. So our page offset is 14 bits, and 15 is greater than 14, the page offset size, which means CI overlaps with the PPM. So that is a no. For our 32 kilobyte two-way, each way is 16 kilobytes. That's 2 to the 14. So CI plus CO equals 14, which is less than or equal to the page offset size. So that's OK. So the CI, the cache index is entirely contained within the page offset. And if you figure out, look at the block size, you can figure out exactly what bits those are. But since we know both the cache index and cache offset fit in there, that's enough. And for our 128 kilobyte four-way, that gives us a way is 128 divided by 4 is 32 kilobytes, which again doesn't fit. We're gonna have one bit of our cache index overlapping with our physical page number. So any questions about what I did here? Okay, so then we had, this is not quiz 23, so we had a question on the last exam. No, a bunch of questions on our website. Okay. On this exam, which I probably should do. Flip this back on this screen. Okay. So we had a question about question 10 and 11, which are about dividing virtual addresses. So the setup is we have 8K pages, 32-bit VAs, 28-bit physical addresses, so this is a related, so question 10 is, okay, so question 10 is about the same thing, is about this, and if we have a 32 kilobyte cache, can we overlap the accesses like before? So the question again is, do we have the situation where it looks like this. And it asks, what's the associativity we need to do that? And so using the same idea that 32, so what associativity do we need? So the idea is if we have one-way associativity, then each way is 32 KB, which means that CI plus CO is 15. If we have two-way, then each way is 16 KB, half of that. So CI plus CO is 14. And if we have four-way, we get 13 and so on. Because every time we double the number of ways per set, we're removing an index bit. So the question is, what associativity do we need in order to have our cache index not overlap with the physical page number, to only be part of the page offset? And again, we want to compare with the page offset bits. We have 8K pages, so we have 13 page offset bits. And this is not less than 13, or not less than or equal to 13. And this is less than or equal to 13, so the answer should be 4. Yes.
This might be a stupid question. Where do you get 13 and 15 for the different number of bits for the CI plus CO?
So this is the question. So with a direct map cache with 32K, we have 15 bits because there's 32 kilobytes of stuff in the cache.
Oh, and that's 15. Okay.
And that's 15. Yes. And the 13 here is from the 8K pages. That's 2 to the 13. That's how many bits we need to know which byte of the page we're referring to. Yes?
Could you go over what you mean by overlapping and like what's overlapping?
So I had it up here. So this arrangement is good. We can access our cache index only knowing the page offset, because it's just part of the page offset. But if we have an arrangement like this, we can't do that. To know the cache index, we need to know part of the page offset and part of the physical page number.
So the S case,
the page off, so they both overlap. The S case, it's, yeah, the page offset, the cache index is part of the page offset. In the no case, the cache index is part of the page off, might overlap with the page offset, but importantly, we need part of the physical page number to know the cache index. Yes? And so this determines whether we can overlap in time the two axes. So we want the cache index to be contained in the page offset so we can do overlap when we do the TLB lookup and the cache lookup. Yes? What? This will be posted, yes. And there will also be a screen recording. Okay. So question 11 had the same setup here, but asks which, and we had a two-level page table, 1 kilobyte page tables at level 1, 8KB at level 2, and 4-byte page table entries. And question 11 asks, which VAs from list share the same second level page table? So what we want to know for this is, so when we do our page lookup, we're going to take our virtual page number, and we're going to split it up into pieces. We're going to use the first piece to find the page table entry, which tells us where the second level page table is. So the question is going to be, which of these addresses share that first piece of the virtual page number? So and to do the lookup, we're going to split this up into VPN part 1 and PN part 2 and our page offset. And part 1 in first level page table. So the question is, so is the same as asking which VAs share the same VPN part one? Because that's what determines what second level table we use. So to answer this, a great thing to know is how big is the first part of the VPN? And we can observe we've been told that we have 8 1-kilobyte first level page tables with 4-byte entries. So if we divide, we find out we have 256 entries in the first level page tables. And if we have 256 entries, to identify which of the 256 entries we want to use, that's going to be 8 bits. So the size of VPN part 1 is 8 bits. So our sizes are, we have 8 bits for this. If you do the same calculation using the size, we've been told that it's 8 kilobytes at the second level, we find out that we have 12 bits. Yeah, 12 bits for the second part of the VPN. And we have 8K pages, so we have 13 bits. And if I didn't mess this up, this would add up to the size of our 8K divided by is 11. And the reason I did that is to make sure I got this calculation right. If I didn't mess this up, this adds up to the size of a virtual address. Yes?
I thought to go from the first page table to the second page table, like you divide that in half. Is that not what happened?
So the question is, you've seen us dividing the virtual page number in half. And the reason almost all our prior examples did that is because we told you that the page tables at each level were the same size. But the setup to this question made an explicit statement otherwise. It told us that we have different size tables at each level. And since they're different sizes, we need different amounts of bits for each one.
So the 8 bits right there, that's for the
first level, which is
the rest is just the same.
Yeah, and the first level is smaller, so we use less bits to index it. So in our examples we've given you, we've often said they're both the same size. Both the first and second level, or the first, second, third, and fourth level are all the same size, and when they're all the same size, well, you can just use the shortcut that we must use the same number of bits for each one. But that doesn't work here because they're different sizes. And they're different sizes in this case because it's not actually, on this processor, it's not actually easy to divide up things evenly.
So the eight,
question is, where does the 8 come from? The 8 comes from, we have, we have 2 to the 8. So 8 is from, 2 to the 8 equals 256 equals 1 KB divided by 4 bytes. Just counting entries. And so then I could go through the problem, but the problem reduces to you look at the addresses we give you, they're 32-bit addresses because the problem tells you, and you look at bits from the 31st bit over to 8 minus that. And you see if they match. In hexadecimal, that happens to correspond nicely to 2 hexadecimal digits, so you just look at whether the first 2 hexadecimal digits match. So we ask whether they share with 0x123456789, and we have 0x123FD00. This shares the first 8 bits, so yes, and yeah, something like 6466789. And this does not share those, so no. And you follow that process. Okay, and then we have quiz 23, question 3. So this was asking what multi-level page tables are most efficient at representing address spaces with large contiguous regions of unallocated memory. No address spaces where the allocated address is evenly distributed. No with lots of just using the same physical page. No address spaces with smaller pages. Okay, so let's go through each of these in turn. So large contiguous regions means entry in first or second or other non-last table is invalid. No entries in later no later page tables at all. So the same things we get in the case where we have these big contiguous unallocated regions is that in some of the higher level page tables, we just can have an invalid entry as long as the region is big enough. And this is typically the case when we have a real program that will have these big spaces and will save lots of space by not having a single page table entry for every virtual page. We'll only have one at the higher levels, not for every single virtual page that is unallocated. So the other question part is addresses are evenly distributed. If they're evenly distributed, likely don't share the first part of the VPN. The VPN, so most first, second level page table entries are valid. So we don't omit many page tables. So in this case, we're still going to save some space, but because they're randomly distributed, it's likely that we're rolling dice over and over and over again and seeing what numbers we hit, what ranges of numbers we hit, and we're likely to hit something between 1 and 1024 and something between 1024 and 2048. So we're likely to have entries for almost everywhere in our first level table, and each of those needs a page, their own second level page table. So we're going to use a lot of space, at least more space than if we have these big empty spaces where we could definitely omit things from our first level table and just have them listed as invalid and not have a second level table they point to. So the next one is address spaces where lots of virtual pages use the same physical page. So in that case, each of the virtual pages probably needs its own page table entry pointing to that physical page. So the page table's data structure is still going to take as much space as if they had a unique physical page for each one of those. So this is not a case where it's particularly useful that we're using a multi-level structure. Is just as wasteful as if we were using a single level one for this sort of case. You don't get any savings. So no savings because PPNs happen to be the same. For address spaces with smaller pages, we would have more page table entries. So that's going to be take up more space. We're not going to do a better job on that. So any questions about any of this? Okay, so So spring 2017, question 12, on signals. Ah, this is signal handling code. Okay, so this is secretly a question about fork. So we won't talk about fork on the exam. You can ask me elsewhere. I can talk about what happens. But that's really a question about fork. Okay, so through this list. So bitwise operations and caches. So here we're given a, we're say we have a 64 KB four-way set associative cache with 256 byte blocks. And Q1 asks C expression to get tag, to get the tag. So a good first thing to know is where is the tag in the address? So to compute that, I'm going to say, I'm going to use the trick I had before, which is I have a 64 KB cache, which is divided by four ways, which means I have 16 kilobytes away, or way, which means my cache index plus cache offset is 14, which means the tag is bits 14 and gone. Yeah.
Can you explain one more time how you got cache index plus cache offset
equals 14? So the number, so if you remember we have cache size equals block size times number of sets times number of ways. And so C divided by E equals the blocks times sets. So what we're computing is the, so the 16 count, so this C divided by E is our, in this case, our 16 kilobytes. And we've determined that's the number of blocks times the number of sets. And if we take the log base 2 of both sides of this formula, then this is block offset bits plus set index bits. Because it's, I'll do, log base 2 of B plus log base 2 of S. So it's the block offset bits, because log base 2 of the block size is the number of block offset bits, log base 2 of the set index bits is the number of set index bits. So there's other ways you could figure this out, like you can divide by the block size, then divide by number of ways, and take the log, and compute the number of index bits and the number of offset bits, add them together, and get this that way too. That's something you're more comfortable with. And log base 2 of 16 KB is 14. 16K is 14. So you also could have done something like say the cache offset bits are 8 because 256 byte blocks and go on from there and use the formulas we know. So that if there's 256 byte blocks, then we have 64 KB divided by 256 bytes is the number of blocks divided by, and then you can take the number of blocks divided by 4 is the number of sets and use that to get, and know that that's true to the number of cache index bits and compute the cache index bits that way. And that would be an alternate way of computing it, which will get you the same answer. And we only care that you can do one of them. So either way, you'll find out that the tag is bits 14 on. The bottom 14 bits, the least significant, are the cache index and the cache offset. Then we have 8 offset bits and 6 index bits. So then we have our choices here, which were these expressions. So you can look at these expressions and say, well, what bits do we get in the result? And one way to start thinking about it is to ask, well, we need the bottommost bit we get to be bit 14. If any of these don't do that, they're wrong. And we can say, well, here, the bottommost bit was previously the 14th bit in x shifted over 8, which is not the 14th bit of x. So it can't be that. Here, the bottommost bit was the 8th bit of original x, because it was shifted over 8. So it can't be that. Here, also the 8th bit of the original x, so it can't be that. Here it was the 14th, and here it was the 14th, so that gives us D or E. So it must be one of those two. Based on, we just want to say, does the 14th bit end up in the bottommost place? Because we know that needs to happen. And then we can ask what happens to the other bits. So here, we have the 14th bit, and then the bit after that is kept the same all the way up until the top of the number. Here we eliminate the some bits with a mask. And that mask happens to select, I believe, you can see how many bits are selected with that mask, and you'll find out that it's 6, I believe. And we don't find out how big addresses are, but we don't have any reason to believe that we should limit the size of the tag. So that doesn't make sense to have a mask which will eliminate some higher bits of the number. So that means that D should be our answer. So, okay. So the next part asks expression to get the index, and we find out that we have 8 offset bits and 6 index bits. So the index is, we should shift over 8 and select 6 bits. And if we look at our options, we have several options with shift over 8. And selecting 6 bits is ending with a mask with the bottom 6 bit sets, and that's what OX3F is. So that's what that does. So here we're shifting over 14. That's wrong. Eliminates the entire index from the number. Here we're shifting over 8 in the correct direction and selecting the bottom 6 bits, so that looks right. We have this kind of similar looking answer, but it shifts in the wrong direction in the back. It's not going to end up doing the right thing, especially since part of the tag will still be in the result, and that's not the index. Here we're selecting the bottom 6 bits of the tag, which is not the index, and here we're selecting the index, but also the tag. We're shifting over, so we remove the offset, but we're keeping the tag on there, so that's not right. So, questions about either of these? Yeah. Okay, and then 18 and 19. Okay, so 18. So we have these are questions about a cache access set, and we have a 32-byte two-way set associative cache with 4-byte blocks and LRU replacement. And we have 2-byte accesses to decimal addresses 0, 16, 32, 2, 14, 34, 12, 20, 36. Yeah.
17
for this as well. Yeah. It will be annoying not to. And the question we're asked is to split up the accesses into capacity, compulsory, and conflict. So the first step I'm going to do is I'm going to want to translate these into where the block address is. So I'm going to get the base address of the block, which is what happens if I block, which is a multiple of 4. So we're going to get the lower multiple of 4. So for example, in the case of 14, that's the same block that starts at 12, because it's 12 to 15 is what's contained in that block. So 0 is contained, so our cache, we have block of 0 to 3, 4 to 7, 8 through 11, and so on. Those are our blocks of memory, and that's what matters for the cache accesses. All they care about is, are we accessing the same block? Because anytime we access a block, we have to have that block in our cache. And if it's not there, it's a miss. If it is there, it's a hit. So I'm going to first convert the accesses to indicate what block we're accessing. So 14 turns to 12, 32, 12, 20, and 36. So these are the blocks we're accessing. And so that's going to make it easier for me to see when we have a chance to access the same block, even though we might be accessing a different 2 bytes of the block. And notably, this occurs with 32 and here. And 34. These are part of the same block, so you might have a hit, even though they're not the same address. So then I want to reason about what's in the cache. So we have, it's a 32-byte cache with 4-byte blocks, so we have 8 blocks, which means we have 4 sets, since it's two-way. So I'm just going to keep track of what's in my cache over time. So I have set 0, set 1, set 2, set 3, and notably through 15. This is set 0, 1, 2, 3, so on in memory. So first I want to figure out what set each of these access. So this is accessing, so 0 is in set 0, 16 is set 0, 32 is set 0. And we know that because 16, I guess we should split up the address. But I know that because I have 16 bytes in a way, so if I, every 16 bytes I wrap around in the cache. Another way of thinking about that is we have 4 sets, so we have 2 set index bits, and we have 4-byte blocks, so we have 2 block offset bits. So the bottom 4 bits, bottom 4 bits determine set plus offset. Which means that 0 and 16 and 32 and 48 are the same set, same location. And 1 and 17 and 33 and 49 are the same location because they share bits because they share those bottom four bits. Because we're just incrementing by the number, which doesn't change the bottom four bits. So 0, 16, and 32 map to set, so this should be 0. 0, 0, set 0. 12 is 3, 0, 3, and 20 is, 0, 1, set 1, and 36 is set 1. Okay. So we have these axes, and we can figure out which of them are hits and misses. So the easiest thing in our first pass is to figure out which of them are compulsory misses. So we know that the first time we access any block, that's a compulsory miss. We're definitely missing because we couldn't possibly have accessed it before. So we have, I'll have compulsory misses. So this is a compulsory miss here, here, because that's the first time we access 0, 16, 32. And then the first time we access 12, it's a compulsory miss. And then the first time we access 20 and 36 is a compulsory miss. So that should give us 6 compulsory misses. That's just the first time we're accessing a block has to be a miss. And that's a compulsory miss because making the cache bigger wouldn't fix that. So then we have a question about conflict misses. So, which we probably actually need to analyze what's in the cache to do that. So initially we're going to put 0 in set 0. Then we're going to put 16 in set 0. Then we're going to need to put 32 in set 0, and we're going to get rid of 0 to do that. Then we're going to access 0 again. We're going to put that in the cache and evict the least recently used thing, which is 16. So we have our first access to this access here, we've determined to 2 is a miss. And since it's a miss not because it wouldn't have been in the cache if naturally, but because we evicted it for to access 32. So that's a conflict miss. And that was originally the access of 2 in the original access path. But it's the same block as 0. So then we access 12. We access 32, which is a hit. We access block 12 again, which is going to be a hit. And we access 20, which is a compulsory miss. And we access 36, which is a compulsory miss. So we had one conflict miss. Now, as for capacity misses, well, how much stuff are we accessing overall? Do we want to blame any of this on not having enough capacity? And if we look at that, we're accessing these a bunch of the 2-byte values. There's not any reason. It's a list of 9 2-byte values. So we have 18 bytes of stuff. We have a 32-byte cache. There's no reason to think it's a capacity miss. Yeah. So our question is, what would a capacity miss look like? So let's say I had a 16-byte cache and my access pattern was 0246. Then I would say then this access, these accesses would, or rather, not those accesses, but these accesses would miss every time, and that would be a capacity miss. Because we wouldn't blame them on conflict. We most likely wouldn't blame them on conflicts because there's nothing like making the cache have a higher associativity wouldn't actually help. But in contrast with this miss, higher associativity would have prevented.
So is that like the check?
Yeah, so if it's higher associativity would have helped, it's a conflict miss. And in that case, clearly higher associativity would have helped. And you can use the degenerate case. You can think, what if this cache was fully associative? Would we still have this problem? And if it's fully associative, you clearly don't, everything's in the same set, you have plenty of space. But in that pattern there, where we're accessing more than 16 bytes of stuff, you fully associative is not enough. You still run out of space. Okay. Other questions about this problem? I'll put that up here for later. Okay, so next question is vector instructions, what to know? So sort of the basic idea, one instruction says to do multiple computations on pairs of values, on matching pairs of values from fixed size arrays. That's sort of the basic idea. You should know about that. Won't ask about specific intrinsic instructions without giving you them on the exam. A description of them on the exam. So I'm not like, if I'm gonna care about a specific intrinsic, I will tell you like, add EPI 16 takes two values and so on, takes two arrays of 16-bit values and adds each pair of values together. I will give you that level of detail if I want to ask a question like that. But more likely I'm gonna ask conceptual stuff because we have the smooth assignment and the SIMD lab to make sure you could do that. And having you try to write code on the exams is usually not great. And so something you should know is like sort of contrast with versus sort of multiple accumulators, CPU discoverers. So both this and vector instructions and multiple accumulators are ways for the CPU to find things to do in parallel. With vector instructions, you're telling the CPU, here is a bunch of stuff to do in parallel. With multiple accumulators, the CPU needs to like look at all the instructions, find the dependencies, and figure it out itself. And they actually work together, like the CPU does the same things it uses to schedule normal instructions and do them in parallel with vector instructions, so you get even more speed up, but it's a very different sort of idea about whose job it is to find parallel work. Because with multiple accumulators, you're making there be more parallelism, but you're having the CPU have to figure it out. Yeah.
So multiple accumulators are just slower
The question is, multiple keynotes would it be slower than vector instructions? Not necessarily. Like, if the CPU can find more parallelism than you can specify with your vector instructions, like if the CPU has 50 adders and vector instructions which work on vectors of 8 values, well, you might do better. You might have more benefit for multiple accumulators.
So it just depends.
Can't say this. Typically, though, a CPU will have not 50 adders, but will have 50 vector adders, 50 adders that each add 8 pairs of values. So we'll need to do both. And we sort of had that in the smooth assignment, where the recommendation was you needed to do the vector add instructions to add 8 pairs of values at once, and also use multiple accumulators with that, because the CPU actually will do those 8 pairs of adds in parallel, multiple of them in parallel. But it's not, so typically vector instructions would be more performant, but it's just because the CPU has less work to find the parallelism. That's the key idea. That there's some overhead to that, but it's not necessarily going to be significant. And the CPU might be built to take more advantage of multiple accumulators than, you know, it might have really bad vector instructions or vice versa. Multiple accumulators, I should say, and multiple accumulators and reassociation, like just the order you do things in to expose parallelism. Okay. Other questions on vector instructions? Okay, so pipelining and what each stage does. So a general note, there are multiple pipeline processor designs. We talked about one. Our stages were fetch, read instructions, split up, decode, read registers, probably a bad name. Like, that's not what decode probably should be, but that's what our textbook calls it. Sorry. Execute, use ALU. Anything that uses the ALU, that's the execute step. Stage, memory, use data memory. Write back is write registers. And we had a few other operations we needed to squeeze in here. So one thing was we needed to set or read condition codes, and we decided to do that in execute. We needed to do it with basically as part of the ALU. And we needed to also compute next predicted PC. We do that in fetch because we want to have that ready immediately so we can do something in the next cycle in fetch. It's predicted because we don't always know what to do, but we always want to try to do something. So that's what I wrote down in this document, but I have 15 minutes, so I'll take a second round of questions, and to inspire questions, I will show this list. Yes?
Could you do a 22 on the three?
Okay. I will. 22, which is about. Okay, page faults. Yes.
Can you do the first one on the most recent quiz?
Last quiz, which is about.
I thought the answers were like the base address is this. What is the?
Okay. First, do you look up? Think. Okay.
How much of each instruction you have to know, like each stage versus what vector.
Instruction knowledge, okay, yes. Okay, which was on, well, I guess we'll figure it out, yeah. Yes.
Can you write down all the formulas so you know, like, X and the constant?
cache tag offset formulas. Okay. So I will, I don't have much time, so I'll start with pulling up our last quiz. Okay, so first question on the last quiz was about the tag lookup, TLB tags. So what you want to do is we know that the TLB tag that we take our VPN and page offset, and we're going to divide our VPN into two pieces, our TLB tag and our TLB index. So the question was which of these share the TLB index, because that determines what TLB set do we want to use for this address. So your so what you want to do is you want to take our array and you want to search. So the steps are remove the page offset, which is 14 bits. So remove the last 14 bits to get rid of the page offset to get the VPN. Then we need to figure out how many bits of the VPN are going to be that index, which tells us which set to use. So to know that, we need to know sort of number of TLB sets. And we know we have a 32 entry TLB with 4 entries per set. So that means that we have eight sets, which means we have 3 set index bits. So after you move the page offset, you look at the bottom 3 bits, which are the set TLB set index bits. And that's what the answer is. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to write out the binary. I hope you remember how to do that. So in Q2 is the page table entry address. So here we split up our VPN in a different way. So we have our VPN and our page offset. Once again, we're going to strip off our page offset and not do anything with it. But our VPN is divided into two parts. Part one and part two. And part one, this is what we used for page table lookup, for first level lookup. And I believe if you extract this, so you remove page offset, 14 bits, extract, or you don't actually need to do that, but you extract the VPN part one, which we need to figure out how big it is, so we can look at our here. Here we have 2 level page tables, which are 4,096 entries at each level. So 4,096 entries implies we need 12 bits to determine which entry. So the first part of the VPN is 12 bits, so it's the first 12 bits of the virtual address of the 38-bit virtual address. So we look where bit 38 is, and then 12 bits from there, that's the number we want. And I believe, hopefully, you'll find out that VPN part one is 4 by just looking at the binary, looking at those bits, assuming I constructed this problem correctly. So you get that it's 4. And once you figure that out, you need to figure out, well, where is that actually located in memory? And we have our first page table is an array of entries. Want index 4 of that. 4. So the array starts at this address. It's index 0. So if we add 4 to that, that's index 1. And we need to do that 4 times. So we're multiplying our 4 times 4 to get how many bytes into the array of page table entries this entry starts. We'll still look confused, so there should be a follow-up question.
How are you jumping from 4 to 8
to 10? So each page table entry is, 4-byte page table entries is just in the setup. So I looked at this and know, well, that's how much I have to go ahead to skip over a page table entry is 4 bytes. Yes?
I'm really confused about why the first part of the VPN is 4. Because the first 12 bits of that, or whatever was up there before, like it was 0, 0. Oh, wait. We're not talking about this problem.
I have a problem two.
Yeah, how is that 4?
4?
0.
Oh, but.
001.
Oh, did I? 38. 001? What? Sorry. 001 is the first.
The first 12 bits, right?
Yeah.
Be like 00.
It's a 38 bit address.
Okay.
So you need to. This still seems wrong.
No,
so
it's only two
okay,
zeros.
Okay, so is the first zero only 2 bits?
Yeah, the first zero.
Yeah, first zero is only 2 bits because of the 38 bit address. Yeah, sorry. I can't divide in my head, which is why I wasn't trying to do it there. But yes, it's a 38 bit address, so yeah, the first zero only represents 2 bits. We're writing it as hexadecimal. You don't want me to not write. I could just not write the leading zeros, but I think that would be even more confusing. And this is the awkwardness you get when you use addresses which aren't powers of 2. But that's sort of a thing which happens commonly with page tables. So yeah, it's our 38-bit address. We have 001. Expands to, we have 00, which is not part of the address, then 00, and 00, 1, 2. Yeah. So this is where we're getting our first part of our VPN. Okay, and I have one more. So C construction knowledge. We expect you to know what all instructions are supposed to do. We won't ask questions that depend on whether or not ALU is used to add 0, etc. So we're not gonna quiz you on that. We'll ask questions where both solutions where it doesn't matter if you bypass the ALU or not. But we do still expect you to know what all instructions are supposed to do and compute and to do thing, know what stage of a pipeline that would be in. Cache tag intersects offset formulas. There is a figure in the book which I could look up. That's what I would recommend using. To find it, we will not give it to you on the exam, but if you want to memorize that, you are welcome to do so. And yes.
Do
expected to know object files?
You are expected to know what object files are and what they roughly what they contain? Yes, to the same extent we asked about in exam one.
Okay.